I'll tell you what I want more of Ready Player One. I'll tell you what I want more of Ready Player One. I want it. I want it. I want it. I want it. I want a 10-minute driver profile on Paul O'Neill.
Hello and welcome back to the British Touring Car Podcast. And if you want to be here, then get with him. Yes, we're going to take you through a driver profile again today. We've already done this with Colin Turkington, and if you haven't already, go back and have a little listen to that. We take you through the history of their career, what they've achieved in the British Touring Cars, whether they could have achieved more, or whether they're possibly one of the greats. Looking at Paul O'Neill today then, a driver that's been in the sport for quite a while, probably longer than some people expect.
And for those who don't know, is related to Mel C, yes. Hence the intro there, sang very badly. And he's not just an ITV broadcaster. He's not just a chap that goes around asking people in tents if they're the present or not.
Look, we found some people in a tent. Are these yours?
That's Grandad. This is his birthday present.
Oh, we're going to speak to Grandad and his birthday present. Are you Grandad?
I'm Grandad, yeah.
And are you birthday present?
No, I'm his grandson.
If you know. He is actually a fairly accomplished British touring car driver. So as you say, let's go into the history of Paul O'Neill.
Yeah, so he's born in Widnes, up in Cheshire, hence the Scouse accent.
I'm not sure the Cheshire lot would like you for saying that.
1979, age 45, been in touring cars for a hell of a long time. I think started back in 2001.
2001 is correct.
If I remember correctly.
Yep, he was in a Peugeot 306 and he scored 74 points overall.
Oh, really?
He did, yes.
Wow. I was quite taken aback seeing how long he's been in the sport. He flitted in and out.
Yep, obviously 2001 was the start of the new regulations. Yes. If you want a bit more information on that, some cross-selling again, check out our Plato and Muller retrospective documentary. He does feature a little bit in there, Paul O'Neill, because he was a small piece of that history.
Yeah, he's raced for many different teams over the years as well. Started out in a Vauxhall, as you say.
Well, he started for the Peugeot.
Peugeot, then Vauxhall.
Yeah. Well, technically, he was Plato's replacement in 2002 when Plato stable door was rather bolted. Paul O'Neill stepped up into that team and he took a win that season as well.
Yeah, he's probably an underrated driver when you look back through his career of what he's done and what he's achieved.
Yeah.
I've always looked back at him and gone, oh yeah, he was all right. But
the thing is, when
in those early days is probably when we didn't used to watch as much.
And when he was given the decent machinery, and I think that's a key point of Paul O'Neill's career, is he's only really had the decent machinery once, which was that Vauxhall.
Yep.
Realistically, he was never going to be beating Tomo and Muller. Let's just be honest about it. Those two are in a different stratosphere. But during that season, he did take a win, and that was his best season as well. So 2003 is the best season where he finished fourth overall with six podiums and a win, which was actually his last win in the sport. It was 2003, would you believe?
That doesn't surprise me. He took quite a long time. Not a long time. He had 2 years out between 2007 and 2009. And then he came back in that quite famous livery, Sunshine, Integra, which I personally remember seeing all the like drawstring bags for.
That was my PE kit bag for a while, yeah.
where he had a little bit more success, but certainly not to the heights that he'd reached earlier on. Past his best, possibly? Did he miss out on those best years?
Yeah, I mean, I think he came into the sport at the wrong time for him. I mean, he can't help it, that's when he was born. But obviously, because he grew up idolising Nigel Mansell and he and F1, didn't go down the F1 route, decided to go for the educational route first, which is probably a good idea. Yep. Then tried to get into racing. I think he went through a racing academy as well. But then he came into the sport at a massive time of change. And the problem was, if you weren't already an established driver or
bags of money,
or a generational talent.
Yeah,
you were kind of just swallowed up in that sort of early 2000s era where, 2001. If you weren't in a Vauxhall, you weren't doing well. And he did well to get 74 points in 2001. To be fair to him, because those Peugeots were poor, and I'll just leave it there for legal reasons. And then he obviously goes to the Vauxhall. But again, you're up against Muller and Tomo, who are two of the greatest drivers in the history of the sport. Paul O'Neill. He's a good driver, but he's not that level. And I don't think he'd argue that point. And then, as that's all sort of shifting, we're losing more manufacturers. The manufacturers don't really come back in until he takes the break, which is 2007. That's when you sort of get Seat coming back into the sport. That's when he's missed it. And by the time he's come back in, the Integras have had their their day, yeah. And obviously, he's picked up a very good Integra and got some good results in it. But they'd already moved on that point to Dynamics to the Civic. So it was always a car behind, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and even when he was struggling for drives throughout those later stages of his career into 2012, 2013, he picked up drives here and there.
Yeah.
But he was never able to get a full season together, which really doesn't help going forward in touring cars if you really want to make a name for yourself. If you're only picking up spot drives here and there where drivers have maybe not got enough money to finish a season or stuff like that, it's really difficult to make a name for yourself.
Yeah, particularly because in those scenarios, if you come into the championship halfway through or not from the start, you'd get the maximum success balance for the first race and all that kind of stuff to try and stop the touring car carousel, which was in full effect in the 2000s, it has to be said, and also into the 2010s. But of course, if you're coming in for only one weekend, you're starting right on the back foot already. You've got to learn a car, learn a team with 60 kilograms, whatever it was, of, you know, a Sam on board, you know, which, well...
generous.
Half a Sam on board.
Thank you.
You know, so yeah, it was always going to be a little bit difficult for him. In terms of outright stats, because I do like a stat, 167 starts in the touring cars, 3 fastest laps, 4 poles, 16 podiums, 6 of those were seconds and 8 were thirds. No, that's not good maths. Oh, because that also includes wins, I think. 2 wins and 41 retirements, which I think...
Ooh, that's quite a big number.
That, you know, I think that's the point about what we're saying about not necessarily always having the best car, was it? Because, you know, if you go back and watch the footage sort of early 2000s and crash compilations and stuff like that on YouTube, he features a lot in terms of... Yeah. He's an old school racer in terms of he was certainly of the knock and pass school of racing, which was obviously prevalent when he came through. And look, that could also be a detriment to him because he comes, takes 2 years out, and as he comes back into the championship later on, it was still rough and tumble, but it wasn't the same rough and tumble at the start of the decade. As the decade or the years have gone by, sorry, it's got cleaner. You might not believe it sometimes, but it's definitely, you look at the standard racing now.
And possibly even better quality or more depth in quality, should we say.
Yeah.
Which makes it harder and harder to get a drive. It wasn't just touring cars that he did. He did go off and do some GT racing as well. And we know him now better nowadays for... being a commentator, a co-commentator, people turn to him and go, oh, yeah, it's Paul O'Neill. Because he has that character about him that just makes you want to talk to him.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, there'll be a whole generation of watchers who probably won't realise he was a driver before doing this ITV stuff and commentating on the minis in his very unique commentary style. Obviously, he gets very excited about which is great because you don't want dreary, dull, what's his name? Who does the F1 Brundle style commentary necessarily on something as exciting as touring cars?
His passion for the sport is possibly unrivaled, and he is always promoting young drivers. He is there for people to talk to when they want to talk to him about absolutely anything to do with the sport, and he will lend an ear to listen. He's quite happy to stop for photographs and stuff like that. He's a real approachable guy who knows a hell of a lot about the sport.
Yeah, I think you really make a good point there about his ambassadorial role, if you will, where he is always championing young talent, diversity as well. Yep. He's always on that, you know, looking for getting
it's
more...
dance band, isn't it? Sorry.
I don't think he was a part of that.
I'd pay to see that.
I don't think you need to pay. Give him 2 pints, I think you'll get half a chance. But yeah, obviously, yeah, he's always promoting more females in the sport, you know, better diversity on the grid. And he is, I think... as you said at the start of this, when we look at through these drivers, did they achieve all they could? I think personally he did. I think he realised his racing dream. He stood on the top step of the podium. And I think he raced in a difficult era of the touring cars.
Massive.
You know, you had to get a humongous slice of luck. You know, let's be honest, and I know we've covered it in other things. You know, had Plato not hammered down the door of Frank Williams and stopped him in the car park and, you know, demanded a drive.
Yep.
He would never have made it to touring cars. No. That's a huge slice of luck that Frank was in a good mood that day and gave him the time of day rather than, you know, raise a middle finger and tell him to go forth and multiply. You know, in all motorsport, you have to have a huge slice of luck. And I think that he just potentially missed out on the very, very, very small window where he could have potentially been in a top team for more years.
Yeah, he's also a commentator for TCR. So he does see both sides of the touring car events that go on in the UK, and he promotes drivers from there as well. There's a young driver coming through this season which he's really excited about that we may even see come into touring cars in later seasons. But yeah, I think he's brilliant for the sport. Yes, he's he over-eggs some things, but I think that that's just him showing his passion. And yeah,
if
could he have achieved more? Yes. Should he? Possibly. But I don't think that diminishes his achievements in the touring cars already.
If we're doing a tier list, so top is elite, and then A, B, C, D, E, F, G, if you like, go all the way to U if you want, isn't it? Like my psychology A level.
Oh, that's difficult. It's between a B and a C,
I think. That's where I'd have him as well. Right on the cusp.
Yeah.
But it's to the pass at GCSE, which is good news.
Let us know what other drivers you would like to hear about. Going through the season, we're going to take a look at the grid that we've got for 2025. But if there are any other drivers, past or present, that you want us to have a look at, have a look at their careers, make our judgment on how good a driver they've been in the British Touring Cars, then we're more than happy to hear your suggestions.
Until then, the season is always upon us. We'll be all over it with previews, reviews, predictions, everything in between. Make sure you follow us on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram. If you got this far, subscribe, 5-star reviews, all that jazz. See you later.
What is it? Jesus Christ.